that.
You have that tattoo on your lower back.
Yeah, like right in the middle. Yeah.
Yeah. It says Etsy Ho on it.
Yeah. It's actually underneath an Abstergo tattoo. I'm not even, didn't even get the right faction on
it. Oh, man.
I know. It's too bad.
All right, welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 224, and I'm your host, Matt.
And I'm Scott.
And I'm Ash.
I'm a little under the weather, which is partly why I think I'm punchy and not doing things correctly.
Oh, sorry,
bud. You got the sick, huh?
It's just like a cough that I've had forever, but every once in a while you cough enough where you like feel like you didn't get oxygen to your brain, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then you feel woozy for a moment or two.
I just kind of got over the sickness. I was pretty sick for about a week. And just this morning I was clearing, we're going to get a lot of listeners for this one, but I was clearing my nasal cavity.
Okay.
And my wife's like, God, you sound horrible. And I was like, you should see it. It looks like an oyster.
Oh, gross.
Oh, I've been coughing that up, you know, hourly.
Yeah,
much.
It's great. It's great.
Speaking of the sickness, I thought it would be funny to
you
go
were
back
to Disturbed.
Yeah, I thought it'd be funny to go back and watch some videos from that era. I started with what was that? Limp Bizkit's Break Stuff. Like just one of those days, right? That's that one.
When were you doing this? This is so weird.
Like a couple of days ago.
Melissa and I, like on Sunday, just played 90s like alt rock music. Yeah. Like that, not even alt rock, but whatever dirt bag music for like.
Is it like post grunge? Is what they call it?
Yeah, for like an hour. We played. It started off like well, like in the grunge, like cool stuff era. You know, it was like Pixies and Nirvana, and then it was like Bush, and then Limp Bizkit, and then it just kept getting worse as time went on.
Boy,
well, I was just thinking, you know how funny it was to look back at that era where, you know, like all the dudes had the long dreads.
Yeah.
And do you think we'll ever see a return to bass players wearing like janitors uniforms again?
Oh man, that was good, right?
You remember that? Like that was like
all of Limp Bizkit wear janitors uniforms.
Well, I feel like one person what Limp Bizkit?
No, what are the suits called?
Oh, like a jumpsuit. It's like a workman outfit, right?
Workman,
isn't that what it is?
Jumpsuit or something. It's got a word though, doesn't it? Is it jumpsuit?
I don't know. But I think there was like one guy, at least one guy in every one of those bands that, you know, like it was either the guitar player or if it was, you know, what was that? Slipknot. Like I think everybody in that band had a jumpsuit.
Yeah. Did you go back and listen to Crossbreed at all?
Oh, I forgot about them. Yeah. Crossbreed. How about that?
Some local knowledge. We just bumped their CD sales probably.
I bet we did. Yeah. I listened to all that. Like I was into that for a while. I listened to some Taproot.
Taproot. You made me
so
go
many
to
people have
taproot.
Turned this episode off already.
Yeah.
Scott made me go to a Taproot Papa Roach concert.
Oh, House Papa Roach.
House of Blues.
I think POD opened for them, right?
Oh, that was a show.
That was a show.
Yeah.
Anyways, we were young back then.
Old enough to know better.
I know. Anyhow, tell us about this show, Matt.
What?
Tell us about who's bringing us the show.
Oh, I thought you said tell us what's on the show. And I
no,
was like,
that's my
your
job. Yeah, that's my job.
Jerk face. This show is brought to you by Loot Crate once again. And this month, you still got time to sign up. And the theme is Versus. We're exploring some of pop culture's greatest rivalries. Dark Knight versus Man of Steel. Alien versus Predator. Spock versus Mirror Universe Spock. Daredevil versus Punisher. Harley Quinn versus everyone?
Mm-hmm. Question mark? Exclamation point?
Head on over to lootcrate.com/ratedNA and use the code ratedNA and get yourself a discount on your subscription and get a box full of cool stuff. I'm sure, you know, with the upcoming Batman v Superman and whatnot, that's where they're getting their inspiration here. So get some cool stuff. I think there's shirts guaranteed now and minifigs and all that kind of stuff showing up in the mail. So do it. Lootcrate.com/ratedNA.
Yep. Use the offer code RatedNA to give us a tickle and help out the show.
Let's do the rundown.
As usual, we will talk about what we are doing. There was some interesting comments about Xbox hardware this week, And S.H.I.E.L.D. Got a renewal for season 4, which is exciting. A new game is out called Blood Alloy, and we will tell you why that is awesome, and you need to go check that out. And then there was a bunch of news from Miklos, which is a French developer. They made the game Out There, and they are super cool. Just two guys, at least when we met them, just two dudes, right?
Yeah.
In that studio. And then Ash is going to talk about the game Firewatch, which is all the rage right now. And another game called The Culling. And then I finally got into Rare Replay on Xbox One. So I want to talk a little bit about that as well. And then in our Nequato this week, and I believe this was Matt's idea that he's been working on for a while, we just asked you to send us a picture of your most frequently used emojis as indicated on your smartphone's emoji screen.
I'm most excited about how we're going to read these.
Yeah, well, I thought maybe we would just kind of talk about things that stood out and try to sort of, maybe we could try to read the tea leaves, if you will.
I mean, ultimately, this was just about getting everybody to out themselves and what emojis show up on their phone the most.
Yeah, so. But I think it's you know, even if we have a hard time interpreting, I think it's a good community building exercise for for everyone that kind of, it's a shared experience. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Lots of smiles and lots of shit.
Yeah, so we will get to that at the end of the show. But first, Ash, what is up?
Man, I've been listening to a lot of new podcasts. I was going to talk a lot about them this week, but I did actually a lot today. So I'm all on to talking about what I did today rather than all the new shows I've been listening to.
Cool.
But lots of new podcasts. We had Mary-Kate Wiles on the show last week, and she was awesome. They actually did achieve their goal with Poe Party, and it still has a couple days left. It'll actually probably be over by the time this goes live, but it was great having her. She was a lot of fun, and you know, I'm always happy to have guests on that you know, that are really, really creative and
hardworking. Just
hardworking, yeah. So yep. She was great, and definitely check out 223 with Mary-Kate Wiles, and check out all her stuff on YouTube because that was fun. What did I do this week? Oh, yeah. I was joking around last week that, you know, she kind of inspired me to get off my ass and do a little bit more. So I actually moved over a bunch of our old interviews onto YouTube. So nice. If that for some reason is your preferred method of listening to the show, there's a bunch of old episodes of Rated NA up on YouTube now. Just do a search for Nerd Appropriate and it'll pop up and you could, you know, watch it there or do whatever you want.
You laugh, you know, but while we're, you know, we're sitting at work and we're listening to our Spotify's or our Zune HDs or whatever. Like you walk by, you know, some of your younger colleagues' desks and they're listening to music just by listening to albums that people rip to YouTube, right?
Yep.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the jam.
Unbelievable how often people do use that to watch everything. So
we had a family member who in her car driving would play YouTube videos to listen to music.
Yes, that is true. That is
fascinating.
True.
Fascinating.
So I did that. So check out our stuff on YouTube now as well. And I'll be adding more, kind of going through the archives. I just put our old Jennifer Hale episode up there just I think last night.
Very inspiring.
Yeah, she was great too. So slowly moving everything over to there.
And that's played Rated NA, right? Or Nerd Appropriate.
Yeah, it should be Nerd Appropriate. On YouTube, or you can just do a search for Nerd Appropriate, it'll pop up. And let's see. So I played Firewatch, which we'll talk about in the reviews, and I played a game called The Culling, which we'll talk about in the reviews. Both are actually pretty damn good, which I'm happy with. And other than that, let's see what else has been going on. You know, still plowing through some TV, hanging in there, watching watching The 100. There's a lot of controversy with that show this week, and watching all the good stuff. All the good stuff still going on strong this season. But Scott, what are you doing?
Have you felt with the TV, at least post holiday break, that it's sort of been rocky? I've been having a hard time trying to figure out when some of the shows that I watch are actually on.
Yeah, it is odd. Like they haven't come back. The time,
well, like some have and some haven't.
Right. Yeah, right.
Yeah, like, it's super weird.
The S.H.I.E.L.D. thing was weird because, you know, it takes that break for Agent Carter or whatever, you know, other replacement is going to have. But it's not coming back till this week. So it's going to be March, you know, so it's really strange. And a lot of shows are doing that, taking longer breaks while some only take a break till January. So it's a very challenging thing to keep up with.
It's a weird situation. Like one of my, you know, my favorite show on TV right now is Grimm. And they were late getting into their fall season. I think they played maybe like, I don't know, like five episodes. And then they took their holiday break. and they came back late from that as well. But that show's going to 100 episodes, so I'm really excited about that. So
Grimm is?
Yeah, yeah. That's
awesome.
Good. I know, that's crazy.
Money in the bank. That means you can retire peacefully.
Yeah, yeah. I would really like to talk to the guy that plays Monroe. I know I've said that before, but I don't know how we could how we can get to him at this point. If that show's going to 100 episodes, you never know. We'll see.
Yeah, maybe.
And let's see. So watching that. Oh, yeah, you know, like in we talked about this sort of offline, but like New Girl without Zooey Deschanel, it's like a different show, sort of.
I have not seen it yet, actually.
It's weird because like Megan Fox is on the show now.
Yeah.
Sort of in the house.
Yeah, she's like temporarily there, sort of as the other girl character.
But it changes the entire dynamic of the show.
Well, but they've kind of tried to put
Cece
in as Jess, essentially. Yes. Uh-huh. Like she's supposed to be, although she acts weird too, but she's supposed to be like the grounding character. I'm telling you that Winston's he's the guy. They should just do a spin-off show on Winston and I'll just watch that all the time.
Yeah, I really feel like they've like rammed him up a lot, you know.
He's hilarious. He's the funniest one by far.
He's also one of the weirdest people to follow on social media. He posts a lot and they're all like crazy. They're funny. A lot of them are really funny, but they're all weird and funny.
Oh, cool. I should follow him. And then plus his whole, his sort of like character's chemistry with Nassim Pedrad.
Yeah.
I think is really good too. And I wish they would spend more time on that.
Maybe they're gonna.
Yeah, maybe. So anyways, I've been playing Rare Replay, which I'll talk about later. And then I also played the final, at least I think it's the final DLC for Assassin's Creed Syndicate, which is the last Maharaja, which I don't really think warrants a review, so I'm not going to do one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I sort of my opinion on this is that, like, I feel like this content should have been in the game from day one, just based on how it was put together. And I'm a little disappointed in how it was supported by the game.
Okay.
And I'm not saying
that, like, was it paid DLC?
What's that?
Was it paid DLC?
Yes, it's paid DLC unless you had the season pass. I did have the season pass, which is fine. And first, you know, like that being said, it took a really long time for this to come out, you know, since the time that Jack the Ripper came out, which was actually really good and fun to play. And not that this is, I mean, I know you guys are going to laugh. This is not the most important thing in the world, but this game has no achievements. This DLC has no achievements. Weird. And no support through Uplay or Club Ubisoft or whatever you want to call it.
Okay.
So it just, and like if I've already completed the game. So when I load up this DLC, my synchronization for the game is already at 100%. And so it's almost as if this DLC has no impact on like what happens, you know, like the game does not care whether you play it or not. Does that, you see what I mean?
So, in essence, you're saying it feels kind of tacked on.
Yeah.
Like, they couldn't mess with the systems they already had in place because they were already kind of concrete.
Yes.
You know, so they didn't want to alter people's synchronization levels or alter anything major because this was not not important enough.
Right. They easily could have added. I mean, if you can't add achievements, I get that. But, it, you know, you could add, you know, the Club Ubisoft is their thing. They could have just added, like, two little, like, achievements or badges to that or something.
Is it $4.99 DLC? $9.99 DLC?
I think it's like $6.99, so it's like in that weird middle space. Yeah, it's a little weird. I would say, like, you know, only the most hardcore of hardcore Assassin's Creed fans should play it.
Yeah, which you are.
Yeah, which
let's
I am.
Let's face it.
Yeah, I mean, and that's fine. I have no qualms about that.
You have that tattoo on your lower back.
Yeah, like right in the middle. Yeah.
Yeah. It says Etsy Ho on it.
Yeah. It's actually underneath an Abstergo tattoo. I'm not even didn't even get the right faction on.
Oh man.
I know, it's too bad. So yeah, unfortunately I feel like it's skippable, even though it's, you know, interesting, at least as far as, you know, what it is, which is just like 10 missions. Unfortunately, I wish it
did. You say the more name of the DLC,
The Last Maharaja.
Okay.
Yeah. And yeah, that's pretty much it for that. So I think that's all I've been doing. Oh, the last thing I wanted to talk about is, you know, like I said, I've been playing Rare Replay, which I'll actually talk about that game later, but it is really funny to go from playing a game that was released like in 1985 to going to play a game that was released in 2016.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'm looking at like these pixel graphics. I sent you guys like a screenshot of something super weird, but you know what these games, you know. But you know what these games look like, you know, they're like computer games where there's like three colors or whatever. And then like I load up Assassin's Creed Syndicate and it's like photorealistic. And I'm like, what am I looking at? This is crazy. And it's like, it takes a second for your eyes and for your brain to adjust to, you know, what is happening going from.
Is Battletoads on there?
Yes. Yeah. So we can talk about that later. So that's pretty much it for me. Matt, what is up? Cool.
A little sickness, like I said, getting over that. I picked up a mobile game, which I don't know how old it is, so that's why we're not going to review it or anything. And but it's good. I haven't played a ton of it, but it's good. Which is Death Watch. It's one of the Warhammer 40K mobile games. If you guys,
there are so many of these.
Is that the one that Ash showed us, or is that a different one?
No. What's the one you played, Ash?
I don't have my tablet with me, so I don't recall the name of it. But it's something like Death Watch, but it's not Death Watch. It's like Kill Team Alpha Watch Destroyer.
Death Watch is gun. Death Watch is a top-down tactical, like turn-based tactical game.
Okay.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. So it's fun. It's cool. Different types of Marines, like a bunch of different classes, and there's like kind of a level up card system that you can use. If you play more, you get rewarded more, all that kind of stuff. And there's, of course, there's in-app purchases, but I haven't really hit the point that you need to do it yet. Although, like I said, I'm not hours upon hours into it, so who knows how quick that comes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty fun. The only negative to it is I tend to only play like before I'm going to sleep or something, like, or maybe if I'm just sitting around the house. I can't play it on the go because it is a battery murderer. Like it will tear through like 20% of your battery in, you know, 30 minutes of playback. It feels
is it graphically intense or whatever?
Yeah, it's like super, super graphically intense, and it definitely is one of the more like recently made games because it's definitely like taking advantage of the iPhone 6 kind of hardware and stuff. But it's fun. It's worth picking up if you see it. It you know, it's a decent time. I don't know. I think I got it. I think it was like an App Store pick when I grabbed it, so it might have been free when I got it. I don't know if it cost something up front or not.
And it's like you said, it's not real time, right?
No, it's turn-based.
Turn-based. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, cool.
So you like you get to, you know, you maneuver your guys around, and then like there's a bunch of, it's very like they did a couple of this style in that were more real time on the PC, but this is more akin to maybe like older Command and Conquer or something like that kind of style.
Got it.
That's cool. It's really fun. Yeah.
I don't know if it's similar or not, but somebody recommended a game to me recently. I think it's on PC and tablet, called Desktop Dungeons. Have you heard about that?
No.
I have not.
Apparently it's a sort of like a strategy game with roguelike elements and like a good sense of humor.
Huh. I'll have to check it out.
Tactical game. So that sounds like something that might be sort of in your vein of interest.
I'll have to look it up.
Yeah.
I watched Spectre. I didn't talk about this last week, right? I'm blanking. We didn't really talk last week, did we? So I watched Spectre.
So sad. I have not seen this movie. It really bums me out.
Well, you know, you're capable of watching it now, if you will.
Yeah, I understand.
that sounded weird out of context, but whatever.
Also sounded very like very old English.
You're capable of watching it now?
If you will.
But it was good. I actually liked it a lot for all the new movies. It made probably the most sense since the first one that they put out.
Well, with I don't want to ask too many questions because I don't want to spoil anything for myself, but basically what I will say is that with, you know, they kind of rebooted the franchise with Daniel Craig and doing Casino Royale, but then they sort of rebooted the almost like the story with Skyfall. And so I would assume that Spectre sort of continues whatever they started in Skyfall. Does that sound right?
Which was the one? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it picks up literally the point that Skyfall ends.
Oh, that's how Casino Royale to Quantum of Solace.
So Quantum of Solace is the one that made no sense to me, right?
Yes. Because watching Quantum of Solace by itself, I think is sort of weird unless have recently watched Casino Royale.
Okay, which I hadn't. It had been like a long time.
Yeah, so that was probably super confusing.
So that one was really weird. And then Skyfall was just kind of boring, if I remember correctly, which is weird because Javier Bardem's in that one, right? Who's a very good actor.
Yes. I mean, he was good. And basically what they tried to do for most of that movie is maneuver everything into place so that they could start over again.
Right. Yeah. That's the one with like the girl, and he's like on a boat for a little bit with her.
They do a little Home Alone at the end.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. So Spectre's really good. I definitely recommend anybody, even if you don't watch a lot of the Bond movies, I think you could probably jump into this one without too much pretext. You'd be weirded out at points where you'd be like, I don't know what he's talking about, but for the most part, it's funny. And there's like a lot of like throwback jokes to some of the older movies that they make. And
oh, that's cool. Yeah, that's great.
You can kind of tell Daniel Craig is pretty much done.
He's over it.
This one. I mean, he is already out of contract, right? That was literally his last one he asked to do, I think.
I mean, supposedly this was going to be his last one, but who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
You know, I figure it's not true until they announce a new one, you know,
a new
Bond.
Yeah. But it started out, it was good. The beginning's like weirdly paced because you don't really know what's happening. And then you're like, oh, it picked up right where it was before.
Well, I think the challenge they have, and they sort of even bring this up in Skyfall, is that like James Bond, you know, those books were written a long time ago and those films started in the 60s. And like where these movies exist today alongside other movies, it's just a different world and a different environment and different competition even.
Yeah.
And so it's time to kind of like figure out what you're going to do with this franchise and how you're going to tell stories like in this sort of like new world of politics and society and everything else. So
yeah. And it's like I said, like I watched Man from U.N.C.L.E. this year and I was like, well, that was a freaking great spy movie, and it did so poorly that
I really liked it too.
So did that. It was fun. And then went back to kind of tied me over till we play The Division and played some Wolfenstein. I still have never beaten.
Which one did you play? There's a new one, like the Old Blood, like the DLC.
No, I played I haven't beaten the original storyline.
Oh.
Like I got stuck on a part where you were like trying to steal a train. Do you remember this, Ash?
Oh, it's been
you were trying to steal a train, and you would like go, you fought these like big shotgun guys, and then you would go up into a thing and open a door, and then you'd fight like four more big shotgun guys, and then three of the big like mechanical dudes come out of the train, and there's like other little, you know, fodder dudes running around the whole time. And I got stuck on it like so bad that I basically just, I'll pick it up and play it for 30. It's my kind of like, while I'm waiting for Melissa to go somewhere, I'll just pick it up and play for 30 minutes or something.
The game is quite challenging, if I remember
correctly. It's super hard. I died just a ton, but I finally got past that part and then kept playing through, and it's still like a really fun game, and like I really enjoy the mechanics, but it is super, super difficult. Like they really cranked the difficulty on it.
Yeah.
So I played a little bit of that. And then finally, the last thing I wanted to bring up, I didn't write it down here, Scott, because it's supposed to be sort of a surprise that Ash and I had for you, which is we need to talk about you and The Division, man. Are you doing okay? We're afraid you're going to lose your job.
I know.
We're worried about your family. You just keep bringing it up and saying you can't plan anything around it. I just want to know if you're all right.
I can't. I'm like too excited to play this game. And I think it's been a while since I've been able to, it's like, there's a couple of things, right? Like it's been a while since we've been able to play something like it.
Right.
And, collectively we have all not played something together, with any kind of regularity for a long time. So that's another part of it. And, it's like a new IP. Like it's a genuinely, like, this is an actual new IP. It's like, it's not Watch Dogs, right?
It's
you
true.
Know, it's like, it's going to be The Division. And I think that it's going to be like good in a way that like people wanted Watch Dogs to be good.
Right.
And kind of like wasn't, or maybe.
Was Watch Dogs Ubisoft too? Or
yeah, it was. And then, you know, like there's a part of me that worries that some of that Destiny stuff will happen where it's like, go and complete your dailies, you know, and like all that stuff. Yeah. But, you know, because I think we played for about a month or so, and then we did that raid the one time, and that was kind of the end of it for a lot of us, you know?
Yeah. Was it?
Yeah.
That was pretty much
which
it.
Is too bad. So, I mean, it wasn't too bad because that was like a ton of fun, but, you know, I just want to play a game like this again. I want to play with you guys. So, I'm just too excited. I keep just like consuming news. And like I said, I told you guys, you know, offline, like I don't want to start anything new because I'm not going to be able to finish anything. Like I'm not going to play The Witcher for a week. Right.
Okay.
And then put it down. So I'm just kind of like sitting here, I'm playing a Rare Replay, playing games that are 30 years old, just waiting for The Division to come out, you know,
for the audience, for the listening audience that isn't privy to all of our conversations. Scott has probably mentioned The Division. Would you say at least daily? Ash?
Yeah. I text you guys every day.
I would say daily. Yeah.
I'm like, have you guys seen the news? Have you watched this video?
Watched
yet?
The live action video.
Yeah.
To the point where like one day he got me so excited. Cause he's like, hey guys, I think tonight's the night you can go preload or pre-download the game or whatever. And I thought that meant that like at midnight it was going to be available to play. So I like downloaded it the next day. I was sitting there, I was like, oh yeah, The Division. And I went and looked. I'm like, it downloaded, and I clicked it, and it was like, this game's not ready yet. I'm like, wait, it's not out for like a week. What is happening here?
Whoops, sorry.
So excited. It was funny. But anyways, that was about it. You guys want to talk about some news?
Let's do it.
News.
Do you want to talk about the Xbox 32X?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh boy.
So there was a Xbox Spring Showcase event. I think it was in San Francisco this week, and the Xbox boss Phil Spencer made some comments about, like, sort of some vague comments about the ability to upgrade the hardware.
Yeah.
So I don't know. What do you think this actually means, and how do you feel about it?
It's going to be the Xbox CD. Only Sega did this. It's really kind of amazing.
Well,
right?
There was, I mean, the Nintendo 64 had the pack, the add-on pack, you know, that so you could play Perfect Dark.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But did it go on the controller too?
No, it went like directly into the console. They built it into the Nintendo 64.
I remember the controller add-ons that Nintendo always rolled out.
There was, was like, they had the Rumble pack, and then that's where the memory card went, was like in the bottom of the controller. But the memory expansion went like right into the front of the console, like in front of the cartridge. Yeah.
I mean, as far as the Xbox goes, I it really depends on what it is and what it does for the machine. Like, you know, I assume it's going to be a USB connected something or other that.
Well, I still personally believe that they are going to release a new form factor of the console like this coming holiday. I have no information.
But that would be timely, right? Don't they usually do it in about 2-3 years post-release? They roll out like new hardware?
I think it was like 4 or 5 years before the
S
came out to replace the original 360.
Okay.
And I mean, like, and also the Xbox One is like a beast. It's humongous, right? And so
yeah.
I could see them releasing one that maybe doesn't have an optical drive in it and is all just digital, which would be really cool. And I think it would be a way to make it more portable. But then like when you read the comments that he made, it almost sounds like what you're saying, where it's like, hey, plug in this like weird dongle to the USB port, you know, and now you can, I don't know what the ports look like. Why don't you, I'm going to look this up while you guys are talking and see what the ports are on the current Xbox One.
Like, I think it would be dumb for them to do something like this. I think it creates a little bit of brand confusion, and I think that general consumers won't want to spend the extra money.
Oh, yeah.
So I think they would have to release an entirely new system, like Scott is saying, for it to make any sense.
I kind of have an idea.
The new system be more powerful, you know? Just say, hey, it's got fucking double the RAM. There you go. And some people would buy it, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I have like a theory about like half of what he said. I mean, cause he definitely says like the words like hardware and like, you know, expanding, but he also says something to the effect of, let's see. He says, you actually see us come out with new hardware capability during a generation, allowing the same games to run backward and forward compatible because we have a universal Windows application running on top of the universal Windows platform. And then on and on and on. So I think part of what he's saying here is that as they sort of converge the Xbox OS with the PC OS,
right,
it enables new hardware functionality, you know? So it's the same hardware, but with different software running on it, you can do more with the hardware. So I think part of what he is saying is that, like, hey, we're going to do new things like that are different for software that like gets you more mileage out of your hardware. But I also think that, you know, when the Xbox One S or whatever comes out, it'll be smaller and probably a little bit more powerful. But then how do you, you know, like Ash was saying, how do you release games that are like, hey, this only runs on this? I mean, I guess that's what Nintendo 64 did. And that's what they're doing with the, you know, the 3DS to the new 3DS. Cause there's like only, you know, right now there's like 4 or 5 games you can only play on the new 3DS, right?
But like Ash said, that's like, that creates the kind of confusion that tanks a machine. Like that's, you can't, you know, we're not in the era of like add-ons for hardware anymore. We've gotten way past that. It just seems impossible. Like unless they're doing some sort of new, you know, connect like thing. I just don't know what you could do. Like if they hook some new piece of hardware and then games require that hardware, it would be so weird. It doesn't seem likely. Yeah. So yeah.
And people wouldn't develop for like, oh, I'm going to develop for the Xbox One Plus. Like that's just not going
to
happen.
They'd have to be, it would be all like first party games. Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, I don't know.
Plus so the Xbox One only has like standard ports. Like there's no weird ports on it. So
yeah,
it's like
three USB 3 ports. And then unless they were to like utilize the Kinect port,
the Kinect sensor port, and they're like, hey, yeah, just unplug your Kinect and plugged in this, GPU dongle or something. Yeah. Anyways,
I don't know. It would be baffling if they did something like that. I have a feeling that, like you said, maybe it'll be some sort of software upgrade that just gets you more mileage out of your hardware. And that'll be that.
Yeah.
That would be super weird. The idea of a smaller Xbox One with no optical drive is actually kind of interesting.
I would be into it because you could put it in the room, in the room where you need the space, right? So, or you put it in your bag so you can travel with it, which would be cool too.
Yeah. The only bummer would be that I have like four or five actual disc games that.
Right. But those would be the ones that you play, like, you know, you keep those with your whatever your main console, and then you travel with the little one and you play whatever games you have on your hard drive, because you just take that external hard drive with you and you're good to go.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Yeah. So anyways, let's talk about S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, this one's going to be brief. It's just a little bit of good news. ABC put out a lot of its renewals early this year, which is crazy. I mean, very early. It's, only the first week of March, and they're already saying, oh, I think they're bringing back already. They've said 7 of their shows are coming back, probably more as well. But on that list of the 7 or 8 shows was S.H.I.E.L.D. So S.H.I.E.L.D. will be back for season 4, which means that it'll also get its 100th episode, is what the cast is saying. So they will, of course, get that magical syndication number, which means that those guys are set forever.
Cool. Did Gallivant make the cut?
I didn't see Gallivant on the list, but I wasn't looking at the list all that intently. So
yeah,
but it's really cool about S.H.I.E.L.D. I mean, it's like, obviously there's qualms with every show, when these serialized shows that have to draw out seasons for 23, 24 episodes. But, still, I think the cast is incredible. I think it's, amazing that we get to see, superhero action on the screen. And I think the stuff with the new Warriors is going to be really awesome. Did I say Warriors?
You did.
Secret Warriors.
My apologies. I think it's a weird show to think about being in syndication, though, right? Because you think of syndication as a show that you can kind of like in and out of, sort of.
It'd be confusing. Yeah. It's like Lost was in syndication for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
How do you watch that?
Like, part of the reason Seinfeld can be in syndication on every channel, 4 hours a day every day, is that like you can watch any Seinfeld episode in any order. You know, same with like what is it? What else sits there? Like King of Queens and Everybody Loves Raymond. All that kind of stuff is like, it's so not a linear story that it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But with like S.H.I.E.L.D.
Serialized drama, it's hard to do that in. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. I mean, I'm fine with it. It's cool. And I'd love for them to all get their paychecks and stuff. But like, it's just, I was like, man, how would you watch that? You'd have to like do story runs or something in syndication, seemingly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know that's what some shows do. You know, if you like turn on TBS at like 6 a.m, Charmed is on for 3 hours and they just like play the 12 seasons, in a row, and then they start them over from season 1 and just do it again. So good old Charmed.
Syndication also seems weird now with like Hulu and Netflix, right? Where you can actually go back and watch those shows if you want to.
Yes. Yes.
It's probably not quite the golden ticket that it once was. It used to be like once you hit that syndication and you're an actor or a writer on one of those shows, like you're pretty much getting a steady paycheck every week, because it'll be airing in one part of the world someplace, and you get a little kickback.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that is as much the case anymore.
Well, I bet that's still a golden ticket. It's just a different kind of one, because like now Netflix, I just meant that like as a viewer, syndication is so much different to me now, because like if I want to watch Seinfeld, I go on Hulu and I just watch random episodes of Seinfeld, versus like being like, is it 7? Oh, I can watch an hour of Seinfeld right now,
Yeah. But that's good news. I mean, I like cool. Getting good news.
For sure.
More good news.
Yes.
Blood Alloy is finally out, which is crazy. We were going to review it on this episode, but we wanted to spend some more time with it so we could perhaps articulate our response to the game a little bit better. But yeah, so you know, Frank from Suppressive Fire Studios has been working on this for quite some time. You know, we've talked to him several times about this game, and it's out now, and it's awesome. I've played it. It's incredibly fun. Sci-fi action, platformy score attack insano game. I don't even know how to describe it. So this is why we need to spend some more time with it. But holy crap. It's like, you guys haven't gotten a chance to play it quite yet?
I have not played. I have not been able to play it yet, but the combat looks like it looks insane.
No, it's insane. It's all about building your combos up, and it's all about, you know, basically linking all your attacks together. In I remember him saying a long time ago that Vanquish was one of his inspirations for the game, which is kind of crazy because it's the first game that we ever talked about on this podcast.
Many
years ago.
Yeah, that's incredible.
And it definitely has that feeling of speed in combat, which you don't really see too much in games that are similar to Blood Alloy. So. And he worked on a lot of this, you know, all by himself, which is just absolutely incredible. So if you're looking for, you know, an action sci-fi, you know, sort of cyberpunk, how the fuck do you even describe this? But if you're looking for something really different and really, really fun, it's out now on Steam, and definitely check it out. And we'll probably review the heck out of it next week. So
yeah, the tagline that I've seen for this game is jetpacks, guns, swords, endless robotic death.
That's exactly.
So there you go.
There's endless robotic death.
That's how you do it.
It's hard, man. I got my ass kicked really bad for quite a while.
Yeah. So
Scott, I think it needs like your level of
I think mastery. I think that's kind of like the intent of the game is that it is difficult to master. I've not had an opportunity to play it, but I did go watch some gameplay videos online, and like a few of the folks that I watched, they're like, I'm terrible at this game, but I really enjoyed it. So, I think that's a testament to the quality of the game when you can be bad at something and be like, oh, this is actually really fun, even though I suck at it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
Good times.
And, there was some news this past week from Miklos Studio, who is, the studio that brought us the game Out There, which we've talked about many times in this podcast and really like it, and they kind of did like, I don't know, like what you would do at an E3, like a press event, except they did it on online on Twitch. So some of the things they talked about was Void and Meddler 2, episode 2, which is their I think it's like a point and click adventure, episodic point and click adventure game with a sort of like a cyberpunk vibe. I actually got the first episode and haven't had a chance to play it yet, but I'm excited to do so. Of course, there is some Out There news. They are releasing Out There Multiverse 2, which is sort of like the, I don't know how they categorize their update packs for Out There. The update packs are free, which is cool. So if you already have Out There, you can get Multiverse 1 at no additional charge. And so with Multiverse 2, they are introducing some new sort of gameplay mechanics. So one of the things that you'll be able to do is, you know, they call it Stellar Embryo. So acknowledging the fact that this game is very difficult, they are allowing you to restart from where you left off if you die.
Really?
Yeah, it says with this new technology, you'll be able to create a clone of yourself in a derelict ship. So when you meet your death, you'll restart from where you left your baby. So basically, when you abandon one of the ships, you can kind of put a checkpoint there.
Okay.
And then if you die, you restart from the stellar embryo that you grew. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's yeah. Cool.
So it's kind of like, it's a continuation of that character's story in sort of a different way. And then, you know, the game is really big on resource management and technology. It looks like they're building in a way to add storage spaces to your ship. And then it's coming to Windows Phone as well. And then they talked about,
not to cut you off, but Out There is my go-to plane game. Mm-hmm. So whenever I fly, I play the living shit out of this. I've beaten it actually several times on flights, and it usually takes like, it takes like 3 or 4 hours.
Oh yeah. With a good run, it takes a really long time.
It takes a really long time. So it is a perfect game for travel. I absolutely love it. And it's gorgeous. And every time I'm on a plane and I'm around people, they're like, what are you playing? And then I, you know, I gush about the game and show it off. And they're like, that's really cool. And
it remains my like go-to iPad game. Like I pull it up all the time and play it. I love it.
It's for me, it's that game and the other game I talked about many times, 80 Days, which is the the narrative adventure that has some like some kind of resource management aspects to it. But that's another one of those games that they continue to like, they made it, you know, a free expansion to it, and it's just a lot of fun. It takes, you know, you can play it on a plane, right? It takes a couple hours if you're really working at it.
I actually played 80 Days on my flight back from E3.
Oh, cool. How'd you do?
I made it, well, I did really well, and then I made it to all the way to Hawaii. And for some reason, I had this stupid plan to try and mutiny a cruise ship. And that didn't go over very well. And I got basically like stuck on the island of Hawaii in like, I don't know what the year is supposed to be, but like, you know, fucking 1890 or whatever it is. But
takes forever for anything to happen. Like,
See, I was stuck on it. It was great though. It's really, I mean, that is, you know, the ultimate choose your own adventure story.
So the sheer complexity of that game is one in which, like, even if you were able to remember some of the storylines and like what you wanted to do there, it still wouldn't help you very much because of all the other things that happen around those storylines and sort of things that trigger other things. So same idea. I would say like 80 Days and Out There are like some ultimate plane games if you need something to play.
Absolutely.
Yep. So other games they talked about is Sigma Theory, which is sort of like, it looks like a
techno spy thriller.
Yeah. Like a cyberpunk, like spy hacking technology.
Some of the screenshots I saw looked similar to Out There style play, though, a little bit.
Yeah. But I don't, there's like a world map and you're like controlling parts of the world. I don't know. It looks really fascinating. You know, again, they kind of had this whole like cyberpunk theme going on, so I'm pretty stoked on that. And then they announced a new game called Antioch, which is described as an online cooperative interactive fiction game. So like, a choose your own adventure game that you play asynchronously with someone else.
That sounds so cool, actually.
Yeah, it really does.
It really does sound cool.
Yeah, so the line for this one is, sometimes silly, often dark, Antioch asks players to follow their own collective story in a Twin Peaks-ish atmosphere.
Ah.
Yeah.
Good old Pacific Northwest.
Yep, it's cool. Coming out, and it's coming out this year. It's what it's planned for. And then finally, another game was announced called Out There Chronicles, which appears to be not necessarily a game, but more of like an interactive fiction based on the Out There universe.
I'm excited.
Cool. Yeah.
A lot of good stuff from these guys.
I would play that too. Like,
I really hope there's more than two of them now.
Yeah, I hope so too.
I would assume
these guys are going to be skeletons when we see them next time.
I would assume so. And they're, if you don't follow them on Twitter, their Twitter is pretty interesting too, because they raise interesting opinions about things that happen in the game industry sometimes. So it's kind of like an inside baseball, behind the curtain look at things with
that's cool.
Kind of like some informed commentary on things that happen in the game industry from time to time. So
awesome.
That's Miklos. Great guys, great developers, great games. So go take a look at their games. And why don't we take a break, come back and do some reviews.
Sounds good.
Sure.
Let's do it.
I want to keep doing our Audible picks because I don't think we've done one in a while. And so, you know, of course, in the same way that Loot Crate helps us out, you can also support us with Audible by going to audibletrial.com/ratedNA. And you can get, I believe, a free audiobook as a trial if you sign up. And whether or not you decide to stay with Audible or not, I believe the book is yours to keep. And then I'm an Audible subscriber and I really like it. I've been finding sort of like different things to listen to. So I kind of got into Audible with the intention of listening to the Expanse books on my on my drives to work. And then I kind of went into Star Wars after that. And then I realized that I could listen to like books that I wanted to read at work, but don't have the time to read at work, you know?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I'm listening to Don Norman's The Design of Everyday Things, which is like an awesome book for anyone that's interested in product design, usability, human factors.
That's cool.
Yeah. It reads like a story, and it's basically a chronicle of his, you know, sort of like his outlook on, you know, the way things are designed and why like people tend to blame themselves when something does not work with technology, but really the problem is the technology, right? So it's a really fascinating book, and that is my Audible pick this week. And
man, I really thought it was going to be like a prequel set in the Division world to the game.
You know, there is a companion book coming out on March 8th, right? You know that, right?
No, man. I don't know that. Of course you know that, but I don't
I know you're joking, but it's actually a thing. There is like a you know, like it's what is it? It's a Division's releasing a, looks like a survival guide, but the guide is all marked up by somebody who was using the guide and surviving in the city. And there's like little tidbits of information or something.
So. I hope the story's good for your sake, Scott. Yeah.
I like
the game plenty, but I feel like at this point I'm not going to be too disappointed if it's terrible.
No. I mean, really what I'm expecting at this point is I really want it to kind of be like, you know, for our listeners, we used to have like a Thursday night Borderlands session where we played through Borderlands.
Yeah.
And so I really hope we can get back to doing something like that. Ultimately, like I've told you guys this before, like, I don't care what we play anything as long as, you know, we're playing 4-player co-op. So you pick the game and we'll play it. You know,
here's my fear though, Scott, fear is that like, I'm going to, you know, go for a walk and I'll come back and you'll be like a full mech suit that's like chromed out.
Yeah, but that's what you did with
and my
Borderlands
guy will be
2.
Like in a diaper.
You played through
Scott,
Borderlands.
Scott did that to us in the first beta. We like turned around and we turned back and Scott's like, well, I'm level 10 and we can't actually play together anymore. And I'm like, oh, Jesus, Scott.
Yeah. Well, for the record, Ash, I think played through Borderlands 2 like twice in the time that took me to get through it, like maybe one time.
Yeah, I played through that a lot.
Yeah,
I never got to play with either of you guys. So
there you go. So I'll start. You know, if that does happen, I will create an alt so we can all play together. So no fear. Don't worry.
I think I derailed ad read, but isn't there a URL that we need to say?
Oh yeah, that's audibletrial.com/ratedNA. But anyways, there we go. Yeah, let's talk about Firewatch.
Yeah. So do you guys know anything about this game at all yet?
I do know a little bit. So I saw everybody tweeting about it and writing about it and all this stuff, and I was like, what is Firewatch? So I went and looked and saw that this is a first time game. A couple of guys from Telltale and a graphic artist and some other people came up with this kind of interactive storyline about a forest ranger, essentially, right?
Yeah, so it's strange because I think in all the years I've been playing games, this is probably the most normal, like, real life story that I've ever really played through.
Yeah.
The main character in the game, he's just a guy. Like, there's nothing, he's, you know, he's a guy named Henry. He has a really normal life. The way that they set the story up is really, they do it choose your own adventure style. So you actually have life choices that the character Henry makes throughout his life, and you get to choose them as the game is essentially loading up. So you'll say, you know, Henry finds a dog. Does he you know, give his wife this dog, or does he give his wife this dog? And that'll actually change the narrative of the story.
Oh, interesting.
So as you're getting to know Henry and the members of his family, it just goes into such depth and such detail so that by the time you actually get into the gameplay of the game, you know everything about this guy. You know where he lives. You know all the trials and tribulations that he's gone through. You know more about Henry when the game starts than you probably know about, you know, most protagonists by the time the game is finished. So they did a really wonderful job just setting the game up. So by the time you're there, you already know, like, you know who he is and you know kind of what he's about and you know why he's in this place that he's in his life.
Interesting.
So
can I ask you a question about this game?
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's a tag that I see, like a user generated tag that I see that is attributed to some Steam games, which I don't know if it's used sort of like in a derogatory sense, but I take the tag in a kind of like a endearing sort of way. And the tag that I see on some of these games is walking simulator.
Right.
You know, so like I've seen Gone Home described as walking simulator, but
it's a walking simulator.
But I really like that tag because I kind of like, I feel like it describes the experience that you're going to get when you play one of those games, right? Because I almost take it to mean like narrative heavy, you know?
It is. So it is very narrative heavy, and it is in essence a walking simulator. Mm-hmm. Like there is no combat mechanic. The primary mechanic of the game is exploration. So mm-hmm. you can pick up and interact with a lot of things in the environment.
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
So, you know, if you find a can on the ground, you can pick it up and look at it and spin it around and put it down. If you find like a, you know, broken elk horn, you can pick it up, spin it around, look at it. Same with clues and information. In essence, you're walking around the Wyoming wilderness and just, you know, you end up going on this big, long adventure. And the entire story is told through walkie-talkie calls with another character by the name of Delilah. And so you're basically talking back and forth with Delilah for weeks and weeks and weeks. And so you actually see the timeline progress, and it'll say like week 7, and you'll go out and have to do something else out in the wilderness, and you'll be talking to Delilah, and you actually develop this incredibly rich, well-written relationship with this other character that you may or may not ever actually see in the game, because it's all over walkie-talkie. But the way that it's done is so, it's just so incredibly visceral. Like I put a screenshot that I actually took this morning in our show notes, and we'll go ahead and add it to the show notes for the game as well. But
you've posted some online as well, like on the Twitter, right?
I mean, the environments are absolutely gorgeous. And as you're walking around, like you can actually, you know, bob and weave between the trees and walk up and down a stream, and you'll find old like Weebolo camps that were abandoned for 40 years. And it seems silly, like, okay, well, why is there this game that's all about just walking in the wilderness? But there is an overall narrative. There's a story. There's a conspiracy. There's, you know, something strange going on. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to reveal anything.
No, of course not.
It's so well done. But, you know, by the time I was done playing this game, I was sitting 5 inches away from my computer monitor. I told my wife I couldn't make her breakfast yet, that I had to finish the game because I was close to the end. I told her to hold on. I'm like, and I was terrified and at the same time terrified just because I had grown to really care about these two people a lot in the 3-4 hours that I'd been playing the
game.
That's
awesome. Right? That's cool.
So, you know, it's a very unique experience. The music is great. It's got a very, you know, a very subtle, almost Jose Gonzalez kind of vibe to all the music in the background. Visually, it's absolutely gorgeous. The voice acting is just absolutely top notch. Hold on, let me find the name of the voice actress who plays
while you're female. While you're looking for that, I'll say the graphic designer is a guy named Ollie Moss, who you've probably seen a bunch. He did, he's done like a lot of posters for movies. I think he actually did the Resistance artwork for the PS3 game. He's got like a really, really distinct style. And he had started by doing some of this scenic artwork. And then the company took his artwork and said, oh, we're going to make this game Firewatch around it. And then ended up hiring him into the company. Ultimately,
to
be an advisor and to work with them. And then one of the other interesting things is not only is it a first-time game company, Campo Santo, who's doing it, who's, like I said, I think a couple people from Telltale and some other places, but the publisher is a company called Panic, which has been making Mac apps for, like, ever. That's what they've never published a game before. They've been making these, and they're gorgeous and amazing apps. And when I saw that, I was like, Panic, is that the same Panic that I've been like buying stuff from forever for my MacBook?
Yeah.
And it is. So this is a crazy story to think about, that it's a non-gaming graphic designer who kind of came up with this thing, and then a company took it and ran and made a game and then published it through a first-time publisher. Like, this is, and then it ends up being gorgeous and immersive and kind of amazing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so that's pretty interesting.
It is really neat. And, you know, really quick before I just get into the little tiny bit of controversy surrounding the game, the lead actress who plays the character Delilah is Sissy Jones. And Sissy Jones was actually in she was in Life is Strange, and she played Chloe's mom.
Oh,
awesome. Yeah, so that she was great in that. And this, like, I'm telling you, when you guys play this, you're going to be floored by her performance. It's so good.
And I'm stoked.
There's no, I mean, well, yes, it's really great. Her performance is unbelievable. If she doesn't win something this year for her character in Firewatch, I will be absolutely shocked because it is that good.
Wow, that's cool.
It is really, really stellar. But the controversy is that this game is $20 and that it took me a little over 3.5 hours. Granted, I get lost a lot. The mapping system is like real life mapping. So there's no real HUD at all in the game. There's none. So it's just your character's hands. You can pull out like a paper map and you have a compass and then you just kind of have to go for it. Like,
it's up to you to navigate.
Yeah. So the first, I won't spoil anything, but the first mission of the game is there's somebody setting off fireworks. And since you work, you know, to control fires in the area, you need to stop them from setting off fireworks. And you don't have a map. You just see the fireworks in the distance. So as I got into the forest, I couldn't see the fireworks going up anymore. So I actually had to put my headphones on and listen to the sound of where the fireworks were popping.
Wow.
In order to guide myself through the forest. So it's that legitimate. So I was actually wandering around in the forest, kind of like lost for a little while. Mm-hmm. But the controversy is that, you know, like I said, the game costs $20. It's only 3 or 4 hours. Is it worth that money? And the same sort of thing happened when Gone Home came out. Gone Home's a relatively short game. Not an expensive game. I think Gone Home was like maybe $10 or $15 when it came out.
Mm-hmm. Also listed as Walking Simulator. Both games
are. Yes, yeah. Right. And people still, you know, complained about it. I'd say absolutely this is worth $20. Even if, you know, you do beat it in 3 or 4 hours, I think it's worth that, especially with the price of a film now at a decent theater. It's like
you'd $14. $20 on two movies that's 4 hours long. You know?
Right.
You know, since the time that Gone Home came out, and probably like now that Firewatch is out, like they've since introduced, for other reasons, the ability for people to return games on Steam. I don't know if there's any conditions under which you would do this, but
yeah, it's you have to play under 2 hours,
right?
And, right. Or have evidence that it's not worth your money.
So now that Steam is letting people return games, like I think people are trying to sort of game the system and be like, well, you know, if my time limit was X amount of hours and I played for less than that, like, why can't I return the game? Because I'm done with it, you know, which is kind of like a crappy way to do that, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. So, I mean, my thoughts on the controversy, absolutely worth the $20. You know, you'll get a lot out of it. It has a really cool feature where you actually find a camera in the game and you can take photographs with it. The game takes place, I want to say in the late 80s. So the camera you find isn't a digital camera. It's a wind-up camera. Mm. So you only have a certain number of shots with it. It's pretty cool. But you can actually, once you beat the game, it stores them all in an archive and you can just hit like a single button and it'll actually send those prints to your house.
What? Like to your actual house?
Yeah, to your actual house. You have to pay for them, but it'll actually send you the prints of the photos that you took.
That's all
built into the software. It's really, really cool. So definitely check out Firewatch. I can't wait. Maybe in a couple weeks when you guys get through it, we'll actually talk about the narrative because there's a lot of really cool stuff to talk about here. And
it's a
neat little mystery, and it's a really emotional too. I think you know, it's a very adult story, and I'm curious what choices that you guys make with this adult story. So definitely check it out.
I'm all set to make choices after playing Game of Thrones because it became very easy to make choices in that game. So I'm more grounded for that. Yeah.
The Culling is the opposite end of the spectrum.
I just looked up some stuff about this game.
Yeah, I did too while you were talking. So I'm ready for you to.
Man, this game is the ultimate junk food. So it actually came out. It's funny. It came out today on Early Access. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I know about it is it kind of blew up on Twitch because they allowed a bunch of Twitch streamers for the past couple of weeks to get in there and play it early. Mm-hmm. And I was just like flipping through channels and I saw that there were a lot of, like, you know, the prominent streamers were playing this. And I was like, what the fuck is this game? Like, I've never heard of this before. I don't know what it is. I'm like, I have no idea what this is all about. So I started watching it and I got really drawn in because the Culling is essentially a digital version of the Hunger Games. You're dropped into a wilderness that's like, you know, has a digital dome just like the Hunger Games. There's like laser fences and all that fun stuff. But you're dropped into the wild in a box. You pop out of the box with 14 other players and you roam around this landscape, and your only mission is to be the last one standing.
It basically combines like just about everything that is popular, like mainstream popular in gaming right now, which is survival games, esports, you know, like something that can be streamed for people to watch. Like it kind of like hits all of those notes.
Right. And so you may love that or you may hate that. It's it definitely, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's there's elements of crafting which people really love. Mm-hmm. So, you know, right when you drop in, the first thing you got to do is like find yourself a weapon, because you start off with just your bare hands. So you'll like, you know, go punch a tree until like a piece of tree bark falls down and you can stick somebody with that. And then you'll go like scrambling around until you find a house, and you'll get inside the house, open it up, and maybe, you know, inside a locker in there you might find, you know, a dagger or something like that. But excuse me. Too much talking. I'm totally losing my voice. But yeah, so it's actually a whole lot of fun. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's like it's the depth of the game. I wouldn't say it's an incredibly deep game, but there is something incredibly exciting about being in this arena and knowing that everybody in there is trying to get you and figuring out how exactly you can survive. So
is there any way to communicate with other players in the game?
I don't think so at this point. It's still technically alpha. So, and I'm still kind of learning the ropes. There may be ways to communicate and like form alliances and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. right now, in the free for all, at least there was not. So there's only two modes. There's free for all and there's team play. So perhaps in team play, there is a communication. But, you know,
team play? Why does this game have team play?
I don't know why it has team play.
That kind of like is counter to,
it's all about.
Yeah, I mean, there's two tributes, right, for every district. But, you know, shouldn't the alliances form more organically, if you will, instead of...
No, I totally agree with that. They did do some neat things to make sure that the game flows relatively smoothly. So... Mm-hmm. There is a short timer, and most matches won't take more than 20 minutes.
Yes.
So, what happens then is if you die, you can just fucking leave. You don't have to stick around to the end of the match. You can just like reap whatever rewards you get and then, you know, whatever stuff you unlocked and then take it into your next match. So you don't have to stick around and see who wins. Also, because the map is rather large, as the match progresses, that death fog that happened in Hunger Games happens in the Culling as well. So the death fog will roll in and kind of push you toward the center of the map. So all the players will start getting pushed closer and closer together.
Cool.
Can you make a female archer to run around as? Or
You can't make females yet, or else I was going to.
Uh-oh.
So my guy is just like...
Controversy.
Yeah, no females yet. There's a spot that you can click on, but it's not
available. I see.
Yet.
Early access.
They're not done with their model, I'm assuming. Yeah. Right. So there's lots of different weapons, lots of different things you can craft. I do have to say that the melee combat system is, it looks janky as hell when you watch it. Like if you watch a video of it, you'll be like, oh, well, that looks just like, you know, wow, what's going on there? But when you actually do it, it's really neat. So there's a charge up. So you hold down the button to charge up your melee and it does like a hard strike. You can do single strikes just by tapping your melee. You hold down the right button to block. So similar to you would do like in, you know, Skyrim or something, but there's also a shove which actually breaks blocks. So you're doing all sorts of, you're combining
like rock, paper,
your shove and your hard strike, and you're trying to throw your enemy off balance and get in as many hits as possible. And then of course you can alternate between weapons. Like a guy shot me in the face with a blow dart gun and my character started vomiting, and then he came up behind me and hit me with a spear. I mean, it's incredibly ridiculous, but it's very, very fun for little short bursts. Like I actually had a really good time playing the Culling, and you know, I think once it's actually polished, and once some of the systems are finished, I think it's actually going to do very, very well. I think it's going to sell a lot of copies.
That's kind of what I mean. There are, you know, obviously there are plenty of esports games, but I feel like there aren't a lot of esports game shows.
Right.
You know, and like the Culling seems like more like the Running Man, you know.
It is, absolutely. It even has the announcer, like if somebody dies in the arena, it'll be like, oh, someone just got killed with a spear.
And then, what is it? Smash TV?
Yeah.
It's
very Smash TV, like, absolutely.
Yeah. We're way overdue for something like that again.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think definitely since like you guys were saying, things like this are very popular on things like Twitch and And I think what you're going to see are large groups of people playing this, like all on their respective channels. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I could see people bet money on shit. I mean, it's crazy. So,
these are also huge at PAX too. You would right. just see crowds of people standing around like a demo machine where screaming two people are playing game. Each other. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do, it is fun. I do have to say like one quick kill that I got that I was actually very happy. Cause normally I just go in and like someone beats me to death and I just like cry, but I found a grenade and I was like, oh my God, I found a grenade in a locker. So I'm like hugging my grenade, running through the forest. Like, I can't wait. Can't wait.
He's cooking it the whole time.
Oh yeah. I'm just like, I'm just fucking ready. Right. And so I follow this guy into a house and he doesn't see me. And I climb like a couple stories up and I'm like watching him like run around on the bottom floors. And he looks up and he takes out a blow dart gun. And I just like slowly drop the grenade down a couple floors and it lands like right in his face and just jibs him. And then I went and stole all the stuff and I was like, yeah, I mean, it's just,
it's awesome.
It's so dumb, but it's so fun, you know, like,
so you didn't just paint yourself like a rock and lay in the river for
that's
the whole
time. One thing I wish you could do. There's not enough stealth. There's not enough of that type of stuff. But I would absolutely just like hide in a cave until the last two guys are left.
Give yourself a backstory. I'm a baker.
Yeah.
And I can paint myself to look like a tree.
Yeah.
These are my skills.
The worst power ever.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, definitely check out The Culling if you're looking for something a little silly, a little ridiculous. Early access actually started today, which is the 4th of March.
Cool. Okay, so Rare Replay. Have you guys, no one's played this. No one of my friends has played this, so I'm going to talk about
it. We've probably played a lot of the games on it since it's old shit.
Yeah, we have. It's kind of interesting because I was trying to think about when I was going to talk about this, like who is this game for? And I think I have a pretty good answer for it. So to start, Rare Replay is obviously a collection of games from the company Rare throughout their history. There are 30 games spanning from, you know, ancient computer systems all the way up to Xbox 360 titles, which include games like RC Pro-Am, Battletoads, Blast Corps, Conker's Bad Fur Day, Perfect Dark, there's a ton of games in this collection. And the game is sort of like what you load as Rare Replay is sort of like a, almost like a museum is sort of the metaphor that they use for this game. So you can kind of like explore the games. You can play the games straight up. So some of the older games actually have cheats built in because, you know, newsflash, games back then were much more difficult than they are today. So some of those early PC games actually have cheats for like infinite lives and stuff. If you really just want to explore what the game was all about for that time. Those older games also have a rewind function. So if you're really just like, you just want to see what the game is all about, but you're terrible at it, you can just kind of rewind for, I think like 15 seconds. If you screw up and try something else, which is cool. And then let's see. And then some of the newer games, like the ones that released on Xbox 360 are not necessarily integrated with Rare Replay, other than like it tracks the achievements so that you can get like progress stamps or points in the main Rare Replay game. So there's not really a game for what like a meta game for Rare Replay, other than like as you sort of complete progress in the various games, you can earn stamps which fill up your stamp cards. And then as you progress in your rank and your stamp cards, it unlocks like video documentaries and concept art and stuff like that. So that's why I say it's more of like a museum.
The documentary is good.
I watched the first two and I find them pretty fascinating.
That's
so
cool.
Far.
I would totally be into that. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, that is really cool.
I mean, maybe the only kind of like negative strike on that is that you have to unlock a lot of them.
Right.
So
yeah.
That means that you sit down and play a game that came out in 1985, which maybe isn't so good, but you're kind of just slogging through it. And I mean, these are early PC games.
But does
right?
it add, does it add like context to the documentary that you watch though? Like you're like, oh yeah, like I get it.
Yes. Yes. So like, I mean, and like I said, there's like, you can, most of these games have like infinite lives or, you know, they all have like a rewind mechanic. So I've been playing through them in sequence just cause like, I don't know how to approach 30 games at once. Right. So,
right.
You know, the early PC games, you can slog through them in like an hour or two. So it's like, it's not like you're losing a lot of your life, but what I find to be really fascinating about this, as I play through these early games, I feel like it is interesting for someone who is interested in game design to go and play these early games. You know, me personally, I'm interested in, you know, game user research, like as a, you know, as a craft or a trade or whatever. So it is interesting to go back and play these early games, which probably did not have a lot of play testing associated with them.
Yeah.
And just like, like play these games, like see how the controls feel, like how things worked back then. And, you know, like, and you just think like, why can't I do this? Or like, why does this character move this way? Or, you know, why, when I jump, I can't like change directions in midair. And the reason is probably because like you couldn't back then, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Things like that were just not possible. So really when I'm playing these games, I'm just, I'm trying to like think about in context how they had to work within technical limitations to make these games come true, you know, to even get them to work and go off the ground and stuff like that. So all that stuff is really fascinating. So, you know, that being said, of course there's a, you know, for us, there's a nostalgia piece, right? So, RC Pro-Am was one of my favorite games. And as soon as this was announced,
Wow.
Yeah.
RC Pro-Am is still incredible.
Yeah.
We played that endlessly, I think, at your house.
Yes,
didn't we?
Yes. So when this game was announced, people are all like, yeah, fuck yeah, Battletoads. And I was like, no. RC Pro-Am, like that's the shit right there. RC Pro-Am is like, that was like a legit racing game with like tactics and.
For real though, how slow is that game now?
It is not slow, dude. It
really is it fast?
No, it is fucking fast as shit. It's crazy, man. Like when
I didn't know if it was one of those things where I remembered it and then you play it and you're like, what the fuck? No, it is slow.
It is still a fast game and the AI like cheats like hell and it's awesome. Yeah. It's well, totally
rubber
awesome.
Bands. Wasn't that one of the early rubber banding games?
Yeah, they do like it's funny you mentioned that because I was playing RC Pro-Am and I noticed that when the rubber banding occurs, there's actually a sound effect for it too.
So really?
Like, yeah, the game is like taunting you. It's like, it's like, fuck this game. Like, what's wrong with you? But I love it. It's kind of funny to go back and play some of these old games too because, you know, from the NES days, like my memory is like I remember playing the game. I remember thinking I was good at the game. But it's interesting to play these games now and figure out how good you actually were at the game because I learned throughout the course of playing RC Pro-Am that there are like, you know, there are 24 levels in the game and that there is an end to this
There's
game.
There's an end to RC Pro-Am?
It actually restarts, but there is a finite set of levels.
How far did you get?
Well, I mean, there's a rewind mechanic, right? So you can save and load too. Like these are things you could not do in the Nintendo days. So I basically just saved before every race and try to beat it, right? Because in RC Pro-Am, if you finish any race in last place, it's like game over, which is again, one of those things that like, that does not happen today, right?
Isn't there a whole system of upgrades in RC Pro-Am too?
Yeah. In the first RC Pro-Am, you pick them up on the racetrack. So you'd have to pick up like tires and engine parts and things like that. And then you can fire a weapon, you know, there's like bombs and missiles you can get in RC Pro-Am. Yeah. That was a legit game.
It was really, really good.
But, I loved that game.
But again, you know, like compared to today's standards, these games back then were very difficult because there was no saving and loading. There was no continues, you know, most of these games didn't have the continue functionality. So you were just fucking playing as hard as you could to get through these. And I think when I was a kid, maybe like I got to like maybe level 20. I never saw the last level in that game because I did not recognize it when I played it a couple of nights ago. So it's funny to go back and do that and be like, oh, maybe I sucked at this game a little bit, you know? So let's see, there's like RC Pro-Am, you know, there are Nintendo games that I'd not heard of before and I did not think were very good. But it's surprising, you know, kudos to Rare, you know, to see how many of these games I actually recognized as well as I was playing through. So like obviously Battletoads is there, you know, with that really difficult you know, tunnel level that's on rails, you know, where you're on the speeder bike that everybody remembers so well.
Yep.
And you know, the thing I mentioned I was about to say about each game is that each game you can play straight up, you know, like just load the game and play it. Rare Replay also has what they call snapshots. So they're like almost like WarioWare challenges. So they just load up a piece of the game and it's like a really quick, you know, 1 minute, you know, 2 minute challenge that you have to do in a specific part of the game. So Rare Replay actually adds, you know, some of these things on top of it with individual challenges and then like strings of challenges you have to complete in sequence across like all of the games, which is pretty cool too. You know, the nostalgia piece is really cool because I remember playing games like Conker's Bad Fur Day, which at the time was R-rated and racy and broke a lot of, you know, boundaries for games back then because it was very crass in the way it was designed. And then I played a game called Blast Corps that was on Nintendo 64, which was
Blast Corps.
It was fucking amazing. You just drove like bulldozers and shit and like destroyed buildings and everything. It was awesome.
I remember Blast Corps too, yeah.
Dude, that game was so good. It was so good. And let's see. I'm sure I'm forgetting. There's 30 games. I can't remember all of them, but
I think you should go through all of them.
I'm trying, dude. I'm really trying. But you know, like when you get towards the 360 era, you're talking about games like Viva Pinata and Perfect Dark, and I think that
also it goes up to relatively modern era.
Yeah, it goes from you know, the Xbox 360 games are the last games that are in that collection, I believe. So here, I'll just tell you real quick some of the games that are in. So it starts with a game called Jetpack, which is like one of the first games they made in 1983. And it goes all the way up to 2008 with Viva Pinata, Trouble in Paradise, and Banjo-Kazooie, Nuts and Bolts.
Okay.
But it's got, you know, Battletoads, RC Pro-Am, Killer Instinct Gold. So the first Killer Instinct.
I think it's funny, though. I think the older ones I would really enjoy playing again, but the... I don't think I would enjoy N64 era or Xbox era. I don't think I would enjoy those again.
Yeah. My personal opinion is that like you would play those early PC games just to be like, holy shit, you know, or like, like this is how it was, like almost like a museum piece. You would play the Nintendo games because you remember them and they're fucking awesome. And then, you know, Killer Instinct, that's cool, right? And maybe, you know, I want to play Blast Corps because I really like that game. But then, you know, you're talking about games like the 360 games like Kameo, Elements of Power, and Perfect Dark Zero. I remember Perfect Dark Zero like not Kameo. Being so great.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Kameo was a launch title.
Right? Launch title. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Perfect Dark Zero, if not a launch title, came out shortly after. But yeah, I mean, all those games are there, and like, you know, at this past holiday season, they were selling that game for $15. So, you know, getting 30 games for any price is a pretty good deal. And I think I got it for like $15, which is, I was like, yeah, I can't pass that up. And I finally sat down to play it. And so I think that, you know, to answer the question of who should play this game, you know, you should play this game if you're interested in like the history of games, if you're interested in game design, if you're interested in the nostalgia of the games that you remember playing. And then if, I don't know if none of these games are familiar to you. I don't know that this would be, I don't know how much value you'd get out of it other than being like, oh, cool, I remember hearing about that. Or I don't know how you could go back and relate to these games just because some of them are so old. But, you know, again, there are some games that have stood the test of time. And those games are, you know, RC Pro-Am, Battletoads, the original Perfect Dark is still an incredible game. You know, I would say Banjo-Kazooie, the original Banjo-Kazooie, is an incredible game as a competitor to, you know, the Mario series as a platformer. So definitely, even if you like five of the games in the collection, it's still worth the price of admission. And, you know, for you achievement hunters out there, there's like 4,000 points worth of achievements in Rare Replay alone, not including the 360 games. Yeah, I know. Not including the 360 games that are standalone games, so... Just, I'll throw that out there too.
I heard that once your achievement level gets really high, it resets.
Yeah, right.
It rolls over.
Tell that to
that
the,
would be amazing.
There's like, you know, a handful
That's
of people.
That's the day Scott quits gaming.
Yeah, it would be amazing.
Yeah.
Just I like think to see the nosebleed happen.
And I don't even have, you know, like there's a handful of people out there that have over a million gamer score. Like, I don't even know.
Scott doesn't even have that. He only has 900,336,010.
I'm at like 135. Let's let's be realistic here. Come on.
So pick up Rare Replay, especially if you want some points.
Dude, play Battletoads. Play RC Pro-Am.
Battletoads is fucking impossible. I don't care what anybody says. That game's way too hard.
Yeah, but with a rewind mechanic and save load functionality.
I think
like
I played it on like MAME, the MAME box stuff or whatever.
Yeah.
And so you could like quick save and come back to points.
Same idea. These games become more tolerable with modern, you know, accoutrements, you know? Yeah.
Cool.
There you go.
Hi, I'm Ashley Birch, and you're listening to the Rated NA podcast at nerdappropriate.com.
So the question of this week was less a question, more a command. And it was, send us a pic of your most frequently used emojis. We want to see what makes you tick. I'm trying to remember the exact moment this started. I had like a weird, it came to me as like a weird idea, I think, that I just sent you guys. Like, this would be really funny if we did this. And then like a week ago, I think you and me, Ash, sent our emojis to each other.
I
don't remember why we did, but we did. I think it's hilarious. I, for one, have completely embraced the idea of the emoji in text message. I think the only time emojis are terribly wrong to use is as an adult with a real job sending what is a serious email. Do not end it with an emoji face. It's like the worst thing. I've gotten them like in at work where people are like, well, you know, I really don't think we're going to hit the launch date, and this is really going to be wrong. Winky face emoji. And you're like, what? No.
Okay. What if they sent you world? What if it was a bitmoji?
I'm not okay with those.
I was waiting for the groan. It was perfect.
Not okay with it. All right. Perfect. So we're going to take this as sort of a psychological exam of
what try makes to interpret you, your screen.
Yeah. What makes you think, or how you think. But I'll also out that I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, but I own what is about a foot or like a 16-inch wooden poo emoji.
You got it from Conan, right?
I did. I got it from Conan O'Brien's show, and it proudly is displayed like on my bookcase above where my TV is in my living room.
That's incredible.
I'm a big fan of poo emoji.
Perfect.
So first up is Eva Vasir, Dark for Hire. Yeah. Yep. Dr. K for Hire? I don't know. And it's at Mass Effect. Very close. Mass Effect. And it says, the nail emojis look misleading, I promise you.
Because there's three of them.
There's three. Yeah, three different nail emojis. We've got
lots of faces.
What do you think, guys?
Well, I
think
try
we to each faces, kind of pick out emotive. The ones that are the most alarming to us. The most alarming one to me on hers is the angel halo.
I was going to say it was the water.
That one just stands for skeet skeet. Let's just be honest. It's the only reason. The one that looks like the squirt is just a skeet skeet squirt.
It is a squirt.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
But it does stick out because everything else other than the nails is they're very emotive. Yes. A lot of interaction.
So a range of emotions, if you
will. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm going to say that you're an outgoing, emotional person. You know,
we're doing a full analysis here.
Up front with your emotions.
Maybe we should add that if you want to see these, you should be following us on Twitter because that's where everybody replied.
There's a lot of them, and we're not going to post them all. Yeah. So go to Twitter and just look at our responses because it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And it's awesome that everybody posted these too. Like, we have a great community. So hopefully we all learn a little bit about each other tonight.
Yeah. We should say that ours are in here too. We did tweet our emojis as well.
Yeah. This is perfect because I get paper by the ton, Ness, who is now
yes.
And Peggy, who you know, the thing that jumps out for me immediately is the cocktail. Cocktail emoji. And the snake. I've never used the snake before.
Snake, yeah. That's a rare one, right?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I also see the AOK, also known as the ASS hole, which I think she's using it as the ASS hole.
You think that's how she's using it?
Oh, of course. It's not AOK. It's ASS hole.
Does that go with the blushing face above it?
Probably. Maybe. Go together.
I think my new favorite emoji, which I'd not used a lot before, is the smirk, which is like her third most used emoji.
Yeah, that side smirk.
Yeah, I like the smirk.
It's a good one.
Yeah, that's my favorite. What
do you think she used the trash can for, though?
I don't know, because it's next to the martini glass.
Probably when she's talking about our podcast. Those nerd appropriate guys, trash can.
And a cake too. I like, so it's like cake and drinks.
Yeah. So do you have an overall read on this, Scott?
Do I have an overall read? I would say, I don't know. Cause the top one is a laugh cry. With drinks, I'm just gonna say Ness likes to party. I'm gonna go with
there. You go. Right. Likes to party. One's in there too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're good.
Oh wow! Look who's next. Melissa Karen at Mayoke. Now she has, there's an artist easel, which is not a common one. So that's very interesting. And I also see that there is a yelling silhouette, which I also don't see very often.
I've never seen that before.
So these are some oddballs.
Yeah, flowers and the arrow. Like I've never seen any of these. I'm sure they're in the list. You know, I believe that they're there. But
the little bit of context that I think she gave was that the wolf was for Teen Wolf between her and her sister,
mm-hmm.
and the flowers were also for Christina. I think for something. I don't remember.
That makes sense.
Yeah,
I can tell you none of the loved ones get sent to me, so I don't know where those are going.
It's too fun. Winky faces and kissy faces, but
none
of that.
You get the angry frown red face.
I get the angry frown red face and the yelling silhouette. That's all I ever get.
Don't let her listen to the show.
Yeah, I see the I'm gritting my teeth when I poop, like that face. I see that one a lot.
Yeah.
Wait, is that when you poop? Is that what you said?
Well, I mean, it's like it's the clenching your teeth look, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
You should eat more fiber, Scott.
I probably should.
So do you have a read on this?
Do you think anyone's actually going to listen to this?
I hope they do. It's so amazing.
I don't even care. I would say Melissa likes wolves, art.
Yep.
And I believe... also, she apparently is really into lunar cycles because there's an entire lunar cycle set here.
That probably goes along with Teen Wolf, though.
Oh, maybe. Oh, probably. Perhaps. Yeah. Like, she'll be like, this is a full moon episode.
This is not like one of those like Mercury and retrograde things. This is just...
probably that, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So next up, we've got our friend Jacob, who I think is the first time he's ever tweeted back to us.
I think so.
Jacob is Nachos.
Great handle.
Big fan of Nachos.
Yep.
He said, seems about right. And his is a mixture of the poo emoji, of course, which is on just about everybody's favorites. And then a bunch of food and beer.
He does know there's a taco emoji now, right? Like
I don't know. He hasn't used it yet.
He needs to jump on that, yeah.
There's also an old man and a middle finger. So that's pretty good.
I like that.
And the dolphin. What is the dolphin?
Yeah. You know, why not the dolphin? And a champion, like a trophy. So I'm going to say
a Dolphins fan. He might be a Dolphins fan.
He is a Dolphins fan. Yeah.
There we go.
That is what that is. And the mustache dude, of course.
That's probably him.
Mustache guy.
Yeah.
This is good. These are some good ones.
So, I mean, this is a pretty straightforward read of Jacob. I feel like just the beer and the food.
Food and beer and music. Yeah.
Yeah. There's like meaty bone, chicken bone.
Yeah.
Poop.
Hamburger. Poop
dolphin hamburger.
So now I've seen, and this is going to come up later. I've seen now the siren, the flashing red light show up on a couple of these. Like what is that all about? Someone's going to have to
alert, man.
Oh, okay.
Alert.
Got it. Let's see. So up next is K Dollar Height at KD says, she says, this is the moment I've been waiting for.
Kate, look at some of these.
First of all, Kate has emojis aside, there is a Japanese keyboard installed on her on her screen. That was the first thing that jumped out for me.
She has two different dancing women.
I'm assuming
two dancing
Japanese
women and four different cats.
And there are leaves, which I never knew there are leaves.
Yeah.
So we've got hearts, cat faces,
some party robots,
lots of hearts, the poo emoji, of course,
good old poo emoji.
And a range of emotions.
Yeah.
I like that. She's got some good stuff. Hers is very colorful.
Mm-hmm.
It is very colorful.
That's because Kate is an artiste.
She is.
Yes. She's a creative.
Look at this next guy. So Matt sent his in. His number one is the poo.
First of all, I said my life is perfect above it, which I thought was fitting for this set of emojis that you're about to look at. We can just roll through them if you want.
So you got, we don't have to do all of them, but you got the fart, you got the skeet, you got the poop.
Uh-huh.
You got loving cat, you got a fireball.
Uh-huh.
You have cool.
You have one of the more dynamic, I think, emoji
these
sheets.
Yours are good because you can tell they're used in unison with one another.
Like, well, there's farting cat.
The cat fart goes to everybody. That's like my invention. That's my emoji invention.
It's cat fart.
Cat fart.
I like that the block word cool.
Yeah.
As the emoji. I like those like weird ones.
I don't remember who I sent that to, but
yeah.
I'll be honest, it was probably like Ryan Clark sent me something that he thought was funny, and then I responded with that as a sarcastic version of dismissing him with the word cool.
Of course.
These are good. These are definitely good.
I don't remember using the champagne one. I have no idea where that comes from. And then the baby one is just me taunting my wife with babies. That's it.
Just stealing them, stealing babies. And
yeah,
stealing.
Who knows? It's anything. Anytime she's like, I have the weirdest cravings right now, I just send her baby emojis over to her.
Oh, shoot.
Oh, boy.
All right. Am I? No.
Go ahead.
You just did mine. Unless you want to do another one.
No, it's okay.
Curious Quail.
It's a band out of LA.
Yeah. Responded, which is awesome. And it's, it's like, a range of animals.
First of all, no human emotion faces.
Yeah, no. They've got the loving cat. That's the only one. But then they've also got the bunny. They got a bird face.
Bento
a crab,
box.
A dog.
Trademark,
a lot of animals.
Trademark symbol, money bag.
Got the crown.
Crown and crabs. Like, it almost looks like a king crab.
Yeah. With lots of that does look like good job, Scott. That Thanks. Was a nice pun. Yeah. I ran right over your pun. That
yeah,
was
awesome. Thank you.
Lots of musical equipment. They skeet so much they got an umbrella for it.
Oh boy.
What?
There's a rain cloud below it.
Scott made it up.
Ash
yeah,
made it
I
up.
I think it's honestly
don't,
more about
don't
rain.
Pin this on me. That's
Scott,
Ash.
Ash. Sorry, okay. You were talking and I just said your name.
All right.
I think that's probably more weather related because they have rain clouds and they have the umbrella
with the mountain. Do you think they use that rain cloud a lot in LA?
Probably not. That was probably the one time it rained and everyone in the city freaked out.
Like 2 weeks ago.
They got coffee, and is that a bowl of soup or is it matcha
tea? I think it's tea? Matcha tea.
Is it matcha tea?
Lots of animals. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good
and
stuff.
And the siren again. Alert.
Yeah. I think that we know already, but they're musically inclined.
Yes.
Can tell by their emojis.
Yep.
So Chris Jenkins at Cloglip.
He's got some depressing ass emojis. Look at this.
He's got like chains, like, looks like, what is that, fog or something?
It honestly just looks like he's into some kinky shit.
Chains, I got like a bunch of crying people.
Is that a dragon head?
A dead guy.
He's got the okay and the pointer, and we know what that means.
Yep.
And
he's doing poking the hole.
And then what is that?
Cactus. Why does he have a cactus?
Inspector Gadget down there at the bottom.
No, that's not a cactus. Is that bamboo? And then Inspector Gadget? Yeah.
Yeah.
So look, there's like the crying guy, the sad guy, the bandage guy, the weeping guy, the sick guy.
I have never seen the face blowing wind before.
Yeah, and the bead necklace. What is that? I don't.
What?
What is that?
Chris, you're a brave man for sharing this with us.
Maybe he was sick recently.
We should ask him about that bead necklace.
I'm going to tell you what this all means because he's also got the wizards the ball or whatever, mm-hmm. whatever that's called. I'm forget the orb and the dragon. I think Chris is a wizard. That's what this all actually means.
Oh yeah.
I have an alternate interpretation. I think that Chris was sick recently
uh-huh.
with the norovirus. He got the cold sweats. He was in a haze.
He felt
like he was chained to the bed. He started like seeing dragons and other animals.
Yeah.
And
he called Inspector Gadget to help him get out.
Yes, exactly. That's the story. I'm going to go with that.
A lot of people have the fart, but without the cat. You got to learn, people. Any animal that has its tail up, you put the fart directly behind it, and it's the greatest thing in the
trademark,
world.
Trademark, cat fart.
Trademark, Matt, cat fart.
Yep.
Patrick Weeks. Our buddy Patrick Weeks, he sent us nothing but 6 purple unicorns.
I didn't know that was a purple unicorn.
Apparently that's all he uses. So that's great. Thanks,
kudos.
Patrick.
Isn't there in the palace job, isn't there a unicorn character?
There is. Her name's like Yulialialia or something.
Yeah. I wonder if the unicorns are in reference to that.
It's probably Yulialialia.
Maybe.
Perhaps. Mr. Slick, our buddy Robert Freemering in Alaska, has got a game controller, purple devil emoji, an ASS hole, and what looks like a guy with sunglasses and a fly swatter. I don't know what that is.
I like the sunglasses. That's one of my go-tos.
That's a good one.
Because everything is cool.
If it is good. Good to go.
He's kind of got like, there's like, you know, 4 states. There's like mischievous, the purple face.
Yeah.
And there's angry, the red face. And then there's like laugh cry, which is I'm feeling good, and then there's like chill time with the sunglasses. Next we got Ritzy at Ritzy Fox. She's got hearts, party, pizza, beer, tacos. She's on the taco emoji train, and then a spider. The spider is the only thing that doesn't really fit here. Everything else is like
party time,
party pizza time. So you'll have to tell us what the spider's all about.
Yeah. Fiore Bianca at Fiore Bianca on Twitter says, "So am I the only Android user that listens to NA?"
Hey guys.
And Fiore Bianca has a whole lot of smiley emojis and a. Like literally every emotion humanly possible.
Those are very expressive. The Android really, faces are very expressive. I think it's really the cool. Eyes.
And then a blue heart. A blue heart.
I think it's the eyes that make them so expressive on Android. They're
a little bit more advanced.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. So at Girl Loves Gaming says, I feel so boring compared to most. So let's take a look. So we've got...
She's got some awesome ones.
Yeah, but she's got a burrito. She's got the unicorn. A toilet. A lot of people have the poo emoji, but she has the toilet.
Right, because she has the burrito. The two right. The two go hand in hand.
Right, and then like the monkey see no evil. Right, so it all kind of makes sense. So there's good ones in there. I wouldn't say that they're boring at all.
No,
this one at the bottom left is like I've never seen that one either. Is I'm thinking, like I'm rubbing my chin and thinking about something.
Oh yeah,
yeah, that's a different one. Yeah,
a good one.
Yeah, see that's a great collection.
Tank Shep at Tinker Queen. She says, I, and then she showed off. She's got some interesting ones. So we have the sick, the unicorn, the gun. The gun looks like it's pointed at a head.
There's an alien above it.
The alien's actually in her top row of emojis. And then we have, wow.
I like the fish.
Robot, bicycle robot.
Some of my personal favorites are the brown haired woman in the pink shirt who tells you like yes or no with the crossed arms or the arms.
Oh yeah, yeah. The no lady.
Yeah, I like those. I'm into those. And the last one is fire.
I thought she was just saying she's straight edge.
No. I think that's no. I think that's the Japanese way of saying no. Didn't you guys see I Survived a Japanese Game Show?
No.
Like so they would do no with your arms crossed and then yes with your arms above your head in a circle.
Oh.
I think that's, yeah. Oh. I think that's where that comes from.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. So next is Dana at Dana Rhea and says, poop is usually a lot higher ranked. So she's upset that her poo emoji is not further up in the list. I think it's like number 8 here in this particular list. But
yeah.
Again, poo and pizza and, as you say, the skeet. And the standout one here for me is the octopus.
Oh yeah, that is I think it's probably my standout as well. And the money bag. I haven't seen too many money bags.
Yeah, there's no money here.
Jedi with the blaster, who's at Sita Spade on Twitter, says has 100. The number 100. 100. Yes,
like the fist bump. The fist bump is a great emoji.
Thumbs up, skull. Those are good. You can do Hillary's.
Not enough people use a fist bump. Hey, Hillary.
It's Hillary.
Hillary, yay. Hillary's I would just like to say. Ones. Yeah.
Yes.
At Hillary Heskett says, let's see. So she's got the two dancing girls, which I think are, I would assume is probably her and Mylan.
Right? Yeah.
The dancing ladies. And then the solo dancing lady, a jet, obviously, because she travels the world. And
chandelier.
Chandelier.
There's no real chandelier. I mean,
yeah, but there's like the sparkles, which I think is the chandelier.
A
happy snowman, because the happy snowman it doesn't snow where she's at. I'm assuming so.
She probably saw snow and was happy.
Indeed, and then there's two distressed faces at the top, but everything else is pretty upbeat. I would say.
Yeah, everything else is upbeat.
Two color hearts. So Hillary is full of love.
I agree. Echap 33. He's got. The poo. He's got a cat. He's got a Christmas tree, and he's got a smiley face with dollar signs for eyes puking money, which is my favorite.
So there's one here, which is the earbuds with the music coming out of them. And what is this animal down here at the end?
I think it's a cat.
Tiger.
It's a tiger.
Yeah. I'm unfamiliar with the dollar signs for eyes with the dollar sign tongue.
I'm unfamiliar with that as well, but yeah. I like it.
I wonder if it's from a custom set. That's a good one too. And then the zipper face. That's I don't think I've seen that one either. Or I don't use it very often. I think that's a core one.
I agree.
And then looks like our last one is Michael Coles. Hey, Michael.
Michael Coles is all about the money. Look at that.
Yeah, man. Money bag.
The Benjamins there.
Got three money bag signs. What's this one here on the right? Like the guy with the blue coming out of his head.
Looks like
here.
He's got an idea.
He's thinking about things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Couple of blue faces here though. I was very distressed.
I think so.
Yeah.
I don't know how this is going to play out, guys.
Hey, it was Matt's idea. And he's got the Weezer symbol, too.
I don't know how this is going to play out, but we'll see. Anyways, see what happens.
The punchline is just go to our Twitter and look at everybody's responses, and you can play along.
They're funny. Describing them, I don't know. We'll see, but, you know.
Maybe this segment goes from being 30 minutes to 10. We'll find out.
All right. Good times. Hey, thank you guys so much for tuning in to episode 224 of the Rated NA podcast. We might have a guest next week. We might not. We will find out soon and we will let you know. But it's going to be a cool one if we do. As always, you can follow us on Twitter, and that's at Nerd Appropriate. You can go to our Facebook page, which is / Nerd Appropriate. That's been recently updated. We now have a YouTube page with actual stuff on it. So go to YouTube, Nerd Appropriate, and look for our stuff there on YouTube as well. And we'll be back next week with an all new show. And you can email us directly, and it's MattScottNash@nerdappropriate.com. If you have a general question, you can send an email to nerds@nerdappropriate.com. Thank you so much for everything. You guys are awesome, and we will talk to you next week. Have a good week.
Bye.
Want me to record too, or are you not concerned really anymore about this stuff?
I'm not concerned about any of this stuff anymore.
I'm still recording.
Ash is still recording.
We haven't lost a full episode in a really long time.
I mean, that probably isn't something that you should say at the beginning of a recording, but I mean, still, that's
I'll just go ahead and hit record for saying that.